This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Matt the Ms. Mizler on the other side. And you know what we do. The 9 o'clock hour is the MGO Blog Roundtable Hour. And the Roundtable crew, you know, we're doing two-thirds of it again, but it's a different two-thirds as the man is back. The Mr. MGO Blog himself is in the, you know, the metaphorical building. Brian Cook. Hey, Cook, how you doing, man? It's great to see you.
Good. It's good to see you, too. So I was going to be late, and usually Craig accuses me of being on a bender when I'm late, and it's just because the school bus was really late. So there goes my youth.
the fans, the folks on the stream are, if there could be like a standing ovation and a round of applause, they are all coming through in droves. Welcome back, Brian. Brian! Good morning, Brian. Welcome back, Brian. LFG. Be Cook. Don't jinx us. All kinds of things coming across the screen because Brian Cook is back. So it is just great to see you, my man. Glad to have you back.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And then Seth Fisher is back in the building. Been holding it down all fall camp, the little part of the season we've had so far. Seth is back with us. Seth, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, Brian, don't let anybody tell you didn't do some hard work because UFR is just killing me, man.
we got to talk about how to keep you sane, if that's even possible. So well,
John Donovan did a lot of the work this week.
Bro. It's crazy. It's so... quick story, and we'll get into the breakdown. So I'm going over the film with Vance Bedford, and so Vance is like, man, what is the offensive coordinator doing? This is just, this play has no chance of working. Why would you do this? And he said that like three times. And I said, well, it's clear that Michigan didn't just outplay him. They outcoached him, too. And he said, well, I don't want to go that far. I was like, man,
you're not allowed to say that.
Why would you do this? But anyway, guys, let's get into this game, and let's start with defense first because we're going to talk offense the whole damn deal because everyone is offense. So let's just get defense out of the way first.
Yeah,
what do you make of Michigan's defensive effort against a team that heading into the season? Frankly, I didn't think Michigan would beat because I thought their offensive line would be overpowering. Michigan went out and they pretty much owned the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and Alex, when he did the opponent preview for this game, was like, this team is not good. it wasn't their loss to Montana wasn't a fluke. It wasn't something where they were close, but they just weren't clicking. It's just like, this team doesn't have any skill position players. And their offensive line came in and had a major problem at guard and was really disappointing in the first game. And I think that's what we saw in this game too. For me, the most important development was Aiden Hutchinson, right? So first game, he rotates out a lot. He's not presence on every play. In this game, he was like, he annihilated a guy who is supposed to be in contention to be a first round tackle. And when he was going up against tight ends, it was just no contest, right? You can't do that. You can't chip him. You can't slide your coverage, slide your protection. And so seeing him being like an every down terror, which we thought he was going to be against some guys who I do think are legitimate Power Five players, important development. The rest of it, I don't even know how much you can take away from it because I just think Washington doesn't have the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Washington's left guard in particular was, I mean, they, and this is something that Alex pointed out when he did the faux film, and then it really showed. So against Western Michigan, I didn't have a whole lot of points for the defensive line, and we were kind of worried about that. And then all of a sudden, I'll post the UFR later today, but like it blew up. So Hinton was like putting the guys in the backfield. Mozzie Smith had a fantastic day. And you could see it on the film. They were just shoving the center or shoving that guard into the backfield. And they both came out scoring kind of similar to Aiden Hutchinson, but context matters, right? Like those guys were shoving single blocking, and Aiden was like going through double blocks and just putting that, Jackson Kirkland is the left tackle for right. Washington, and he was just shoving that guy back into the quarterback or, you know, set him up and then going inside of him. That was not a guy that Montana was able to deal with. They just kind of avoided him.
And
Michigan went right at him.
Hutchinson was going against Jackson Kirkland, and the interior guys were like going up against guys who got pulled against Montana.
Right.
So context is a big differentiator there. But honestly, for them to be able to rack up points against any Power 5 offensive line, I think we would have taken that going into the season, right? Like,
100%.
We were so worried that this was going to be a disaster zone. And like now I think you might get to middling. I think that's a good place to be 2 games into the season for what we thought was the weak point of the whole team.
That is awesome perspective, Brian Cook. I thought the same thing. Like, I'm not going to complain about, you know, them maybe being overrated. Okay, they were overrated heading into the season and dominating an overrated team. Michigan couldn't dominate anyone past Minnesota last year. So you got to take that. And you look at a guy, I mean, how about Jordan Whitley? There was a play where he pushed the center like 5 yards in the backfield. Now, he can't, he's not going to give you 3 plays in a row. But they're making progress, right? You're getting one good play. So let's, you know, lose about 10 more pounds. Maybe you'll get, you know, 2 or 3 good plays. But you're seeing that. You're seeing that around. And then the other thing that was evident is that they do a good job with their disguises. That was another comment that Vance made. Show one look, rotate into another pre-snap, keep the offense off balance, and then really confuse that offensive line with movement along the front as well. It's just been, he said, man, this guy, and he was talking about Mike McDonald, this guy's calling a good game.
Yeah.
This guy's calling a good game. He called a heck of a game.
I mean, I just need to pump the brakes a little bit because Donovan called a terrible game. And there were like a lot of times where like they're lining up. I mean, the very first play of the game, they're lining up and Michigan's like slanting in and they just don't have, like, they're like 3 blockers short for that. And I'm like, oh, and they don't check out of it. They don't have the time to check out of it. And I'm just like,
yes.
I mean, right off the bat, you know that this matchup is going one way.
I asked both Al and Vance about that. I said, hey, man, so audible? I mean, that doesn't exist for them?
So they couldn't do it because their great plan was they came up with like this huddle. What were we calling it before? Huddle tempo. So like they huddled and then they like run to the line with like 6 seconds left and try to get set. And Michigan runs to the line and they get set. But you have to like wait a second before you can snap the ball. So Michigan has one more second. So Michigan was fine. The only time it got Michigan at all was because Michigan started going, okay, well, we can change. And they start bringing guys in. And then like a couple times the defensive tackles weren't set. But in return, they didn't have any time to check because they're lining up with 6 seconds because they're huddling.
Yeah, man. This play has no chance of working. I said, you are indicting their offensive coordinator. Well, no, I'm not. Yes, you are indicting their offensive coordinator.
He can't say that. Like, they can't get on there and be like, you know, oh, man, I love it when they give me 2 backs. Because, like, it's just, like, you cannot do that.
He said that. He said those words. I love it when they give it. Oh, man, I'd still be worth. Give me. I could come out of retirement and coach again. like, you are indicting him with every comment, dude. Like, come on, man. You might as well go the whole way. This dude is terrible. You don't know if that would be interested to see if they make it. So how about this? Because, you know, clearly they did a really, really effective job against a Washington team that have some question marks at the receiver position, right? Then, you know, you start to have to use your tight end to chip on Aiden and that kind of thing. So they were limited offensively. Give me your broad view of defense about, you know, what you're pleased with, what you're still concerned about with regard to this defense.
I think the number one thing sort of as a holistic sense is that we've seen quarterbacks be confused and not find people to hit in zones. So before, like if a quarterback was holding the ball, it's because Michigan was man to man and they were dominating all the receivers. And that worked great until, you know, you come up against a team with three great receivers and your third cornerback isn't up to it. So, you know, kind of the story of the last few Ohio State games was that Don Brown's stuff didn't work against that level of competition. Mm-hmm. And so far we've seen guys drop back to pass and it's zone and they don't know where to go. Because as you mentioned, they're disguising well. They're actually practicing zones, which was supposed to be a focus last year, but because of circumstances was not. And the kind of breakdowns that you expect in defenses that are being taught and they're new defenses are relatively rare. I mean, there's been a few here and there, but
mostly overall, the linebackers, to be honest.
And that's the hardest thing to do, and probably in football is play a zone pass drop right as a linebacker when you're trying to check for the run. So I think that's really encouraging because it points both to like, okay, this is something that can work at high levels of competition, and two, this appears to be a very good teaching staff. So they can get their concepts across and get everybody bought in. And you got Junior Colson comes in and Mozzie Smith's in the wrong gap. And so he goes and butt taps Mozzie Smith over into the right gap. He's a true freshman. So someone is communicating something to these guys and it's going pretty well.
I did want to tap the brakes because we were really positive about Colson on the podcast. And then when he came in for scoring, I mean, he got pulled in this game at the end because he was still making some major freshman mistakes. Wow. And even like the butt tap thing was like, I think Hawkins was calling something out and Mozzie just wasn't listening. He was locked in or whatever. And so finally, he comes down. I still like it, right? But I don't think that was Colson identifying, you know, where the defense is supposed to be. But when you point him in the right direction, man, he's got way more upside than the other guys on the team. Like, they were running him on the same blitzes that they're running Nakai Hill-Green on. And I like Nakai Hill-Green. He had a pretty good game. But Colson just gets there faster. He gets there with more power. And when he knows what he's doing, it's something to see.
Yeah, I think Hilo said in the summer, he's like, he can run. That dude can really run. It might be in the wrong direction. He might not be able to find his way to the bathroom, but wherever he's going, he gets there fast.
There were a couple of times where like Michigan dropped into zones, and this goes back to like how McDonald likes to mess with the offense by giving them hard reads because he has the defensive ends, and I call them defensive ends. He calls them outside linebackers, but like, you know, if you're 270 pounds, you're a defensive end. But he had those guys dropping out into coverage so they could blitz from different angles. And a lot of times you would just have that guy dropping and had no idea where to go because he's defensive end. And, you know, he would bonk into the middle linebacker because he doesn't know where to go either. And then everyone else has like got a little got issues in coverage. You can get away with that, I think, if you're the Ravens with like their kind of cornerbacks. You can't really get away with that against an offense that really knows where they want to put the ball. But then it goes back to Donovan. He was so worried about protection that he had like 8-man protections and was only sending a few guys into routes. So Michigan, their cornerbacks did a good job, and then you have one guy inside to help each one of them. That's it. That's all you need.
Yeah, feeling much better about the front. And the corners have improved for sure, but there are much stiffer tests ahead. You mentioned liking Junior Colson. Even though the grade maybe wasn't as high as he would have liked or anyone would have liked. But Rod Moore, I'm figuring that your grading was probably similar for him. But I like that guy has come in and he has jumped a lot of guys on the depth chart to be playing. He's not playing just mop-up duty. I mean, he's playing early in the game.
Yeah, My take was basically exactly that, that his score was bad, but you can see it. So, like, he got hit. They went with a zero coverage, so he had no help over the top. And they went with zero coverage, and they got him on a fade. But, like, he's in phase. Like, he just needs to turn around and kind of make that. And he had a chance to make that play. That was kind of the story of the game. I thought everything Washington got through the air, almost all the time, there was a cornerback, like, in the guy's chest as he was catching it. Or, like, you know, he's got two people flying through the air and just barely makes it over their fingertips. And so he got hit with that. He had a mistake in cover three early on, which was just a freshman mistake. He did not drive on the ball. And there was a slant coming in his way. His guy came inside and he stepped with his guy instead of just, you know, going after where he's supposed to go. That's easy to clean up, right? That's not a hard read. It's a 3rd and 15 and he gave it up. But like that's, and so that comes in for maximal bad scoring. So then he also, at the very end of the game, he jumped a route. And like they were getting killed on these like tight end outs all the time, which happens against cover three because you got to have a real playmaker in order to stop that. And he jumped the route and he almost had a pick six right at the end of the game. So you know, you can see it with him.
Yeah, a lot to be encouraged about, a lot to be excited about with that defense. Now, on offense, they were pretty impressive running the football. The counter was the staple play. We'll get to this on the other side. Counter was a staple play, and they gave them a whole bunch of different counters. I mean, it was like a smorgasbord of counters that Washington just said, what the hell, man? I mean, we can't stop this play. But a lot of fans are talking about the 44 yards passing, not the 344 or 43 yards rushing, the 44 yards passing and what that portends moving forward. So we will get into that on the other side. Get your take on the offensive showing. All of the, hey, Brian. Wait, but we did get this.
Hey. That was probably somebody making that joke. Oh, there we go. I was gonna say, like, on our message board, whenever you post something, someone go like, if Seth writes the article, they're like, "Oh, good job, Brian." Like,
they do that on my articles too. They say good job, Seth or Ace. So right. It's like a thing. Yeah, I'm gonna get some water.
All right. The interesting thing for me was, you know, watching the game live. Mm-hmm. Man, it feels awful conservative here, right? I mean, I had the same reaction as everyone else. Like, you're winning. I said they're going to have to throw the football more in the second half. Then they come out and they run 8 straight times and score a touchdown. So maybe not. But, you know, you start going back over the tape on Sunday. I was like, man, there were some not so good signs for, you know, with Cade.
Yeah.
Devin comes in Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, listen, they made the 100% right move to start going to running as much as they did, he said, because, man, he was not feeling it. And he said, I'm not speaking from a position where I'm just talking down to dude, because he said, I've been there. There was a game, and it was the UConn game in 2013. He said, there was a game where I couldn't complete anything. And he said, I went back to the coordinator, and I was like, look, went back to Al. Like, hey, run the ball. We need to run the ball. Because I can't complete shit stuff that I complete with my eyes closed. And here I am in this game, and we got to do something different. And that was readily apparent to him. And then totally separate from that, Al said the same thing. He's like, man, he's not seeing coverages in this game.
Mm-hmm.
He's not identifying, you know, he's not letting go of the ball. He wants the guy to be wide open instead of anticipating guys being open. Some of the balls he's throwing are inaccurate, and it sounds like that was a bit of a carryover from practice that week. So they made a decision early in that game, like, we are not going to put this on his shoulder. Well,
it was nice of Washington to play along too, because they, you know, they were leaving two guys back all the time.
Yeah,
watch your profanity.
Yeah, it made it. Easier to do that, to not put it on the shoulders, and you're gouging them.
Yeah.
You're gouging them on the ground. But
I mean, if you tell Jim Harbaugh, hey man, you gotta beat me by running power all day, what is he gonna turn that down? But yeah, I saw that with Cade. That was
I'm interested to see, you know, how because clearly they're going to try to run the football more in every game, but how much more emphasis is there on the throw game this week just to see if they get him on track? Because this one game, he was efficient in the first game.
I mean, you
this game, it might have been, I don't know if it was nerves. I don't know if it was JJ throwing that big, you know, having that big debut. I don't know if it was
I think it was Ronnie Bell. I think when you got a safety blanket out there like Ronnie Bell, who you know is going to get open for you, and, you know, the plays are designed to make sure, like, that guy, you know, either he's going to be your first read or he's going to be your third read and he's going to be open. And not having somebody out there that he trusts right now, I think was really – I thought the receivers were actually terrible in this game. And, you know, maybe that doesn't absolve McNamara for what was really a bad game from him. But, you know, I could see how if you're out there and none of them look like they're going to do something, it's, you know, it's hard to trust them to do something.
I guess the part that he couldn't see during the game, but that was a microcosm of this. Because, look, when JJ got in the game, they did throw it a little more. Mm-hmm. They did. I could see how he would feel a certain kind of way about that. I could see it. Right. He gets in, and then he has this big play, and I get a question in the press conference. Hey, what did you think of that big play? It's like, hello, I was the starter. Then during the Washington game, they introduced Cade McNamara, and it's not a picture of Cade.
Yeah.
He could see
it. Was it a picture of Shea?
No, it was a picture of JJ.
Of JJ.
I didn't see that.
Oh, wait, I don't have it on this computer. But, yeah, they put up this is Cade McNamara, all this stats, and it's JJ with a big smile on his face standing there. It's like, dude.
Yeah, I was sitting with Jamie Mack, and he noticed. yep, it was. I didn't pick it up right away because I usually don't even watch that kind of thing. And then he's like, hey, isn't that JJ?
It's like, see? That's what I was talking about. But I think he'll get back on track. Was his first big game. First big game at night. National TV audience. The maize pom-poms flowing. You get how that can get to that.
I see pom poms. I'm like, I'm not going to see any third downs in this game.
they were like, dude, this is it was electric down there. You couldn't really feel it from the press box, like they were talking about. It looked good. It looked impressive, but they were talking like it was epic down there.
It was pretty epic in the stands. I mean,
I didn't think it was that. Like,
yeah,
the difference.
You sitting in the worst spot for that.
What do you mean?
Like, you always get like a rotating cast of different people, right?
Yes, I do.
So, I mean, we're like, you know, season ticket holders who sit with each other and have been doing so for 25 years.
God, that sounds amazing. Instead, it's just none of these people know how to act. Like, you get out, you get there, and like they're taking pictures with each other, and I'm like, that's a bad sign. Mm-hmm. I'm here every week. I don't take pictures.
Back to the MGo Blog Roundtable. So let's just. All right, your visceral reactions to the game. Take me back to Saturday night, whatever time it was when it ended. You saw Michigan win the game 31-10, and you thought what, Brian, about that offensive performance?
There's not one thing to think, right? Because there's two different things to think. One is that they paved a Power 5 team in a way that it's been a long time since I've seen that, where like a bad run is 4 yards. Like, that's... that almost never happens. So that's in your head. And at the same time, it's like, this doesn't seem like a team that actually has much faith in its passing game. And so you got to hold both facts in your head. Like, there was Twitter just blew up at each other because there was a faction that was like, look at this, we're crushing these guys on the ground. And I was like, but okay, our passing game is a little ominous. And I mean, they're both right and they're still yelling at each other. So just feels like people are got to be on one side or the other side. And I think that both of those things are true. Like, Michigan has two great running backs. I think this is their best running back set in a long time. I think Blake Corum is their best runner since Denard Robinson. And I'm really impressed with what they've been able to do with the offensive line so far. Those things are true. It is also true that there were points in this game where a team that had any faith in its passing game would have passed, and that Michigan did not. And so that's something that is concerning and something to work on. And guy's first big start, it's a night game, he's hyped up, you know, maybe this isn't going to be who he is going forward, but So it's half really encouraging and half a little concerning.
Seth?
Yeah, I mean, we talked to Denard when we did like a history podcast on 2011, and you know, I asked him about his Under the Lights game, and he was like, because he was terrible for like the first three quarters, right? And he's like, I was just so hype, like it was just getting, and that was Denard, right? Like he's going to get more hype because that's who he is, but like that, I'm sure that affects them in ways that we can't really chart or really see. But I also want to point out that you're playing against an opponent, so like. Some of the ways that you can, if you have a running game that's really successful and just pounding it for 4, 6, 8, 22 yards at a time, then normally they'll start bringing down their safeties, they'll start bringing their linebackers down at the first thing. You know, we've played a lot of teams that just want to stop the run and make you pass. There was no point, not a single point, not even when they got down into the, you know, to the goal line, when Washington was going to force them to pass or force them to, yeah.
Well, I mean, they were usually plus one in the box since Michigan didn't really have much of a quarterback run game. There was the one keep. So,
yeah.
But their safety, when they have a deep safety, is a deep safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't get involved at all. And you can't even like really funnel to him. Like if you got a safety at 15 yards, you can use him in the run game some, but they're lining their guy up at 20. So when Blake Corum breaks into the open field, that guy's nowhere near Corum. I don't think it mattered what angle he took. Like, that wasn't happening. And like, so yeah, I think it's really encouraging that they were able to completely pave a Power Five team that we thought probably was going to have a pretty decent defense going in. Like they have a couple of established defensive tackles. They have, you know, their head coach used to be a defensive coordinator with good defenses. They've historically been a pretty good defense. So to be able to do what Michigan did does probably say something bad about Washington, but just from a Michigan perspective, it's really encouraging, yeah. Especially because like Haskins had a great game too. Like Corum, I cannot express like how excited I am about Corum because Mike Hart, but fast. And then he breaks into the open field. And you know what that felt like? That felt like Denard Robinson against Western Michigan because he breaks through that line and there's like, just that's a touchdown. There's nothing that anyone can do to stop this from happening.
You made a really good point about Thunder Lightning in the podcast that like definitely showed on the tape that like the angle you need to take in order to get Haskins down is not the angle you need to take in order to get to Blake Corum. So like you're adjusting, and there were like two plays away from each other where like the same safety just misses Corum because he was taking the same angle that just got Haskins down two plays earlier.
Yeah, it was an atrocious angle. And you can see him literally say, like, oh, blank. Like, oh, bleep. You can hear it through the screen.
We're thinking of two different plays, actually. But there was another play. Well, where the one where Corum actually tripped on his own feet afterwards is the one I was talking about. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was just bringing, like, so if you're a safety and you see you need to go tackle Haskins, what do you need? You need forward momentum. Because otherwise that guy's going to run you over. So you take a really aggressive angle and he's not going to run around you. He's going to try to run you over. And then when Blake Corum's on the field, you do the same thing and you just get dusted. So
that Corum play you're talking about, I mean, that shows you how much of a zone he's in because he completely cut off his puller. I mean, he just ran right in front of him and cut him off and still almost took it the distance. He's just feeling it. But the passing game, Cade McNamara, it looked like he wasn't feeling it in that game. So getting him back on track, it feels like, because it's just one game, he was really efficient in game one. So getting him back to that point doesn't seem like it shouldn't be a huge undertaking. I imagine that will be a focus versus Northern Illinois. But at the same time, you know, you also need to, I got this question a lot, you know, how much J.J. McCarthy do you work into that game? Do you play Cade the whole game thinking, hey, you know, we gotta make sure that we're working this passing game. We're getting him all the reps he can get. Or do you say, you know what, but we need to be getting JJ some snaps too. How do you balance the two?
I mean, unless you can see it in practice, that's a hard question to answer, right? Like if JJ is close, if he's more talented, then yeah, I might work him in a little bit. If it's not really that close down to down in practice, then I think you got to focus on Cade McNamara. But since I don't know, mm-hmm. can't really answer that question.
Yeah. I mean, I go back to you're playing an opponent. So, you know, Washington was just daring. This game was like, don't screw anything up, right? So, like, the one thing you don't need in this game is, like, an interception or something to give Washington, like, a moment of life. And, you know, as long as you're paving them on the ground, I thought it took tremendous discipline to stick to what was working as long as it was working. And, like, yeah, you want to get your quarterback.
I mean, that's what Harbaugh wants to do, right? Like, if it doesn't take discipline for Jim Harbaugh to be like, should we run the ball again? Yes.
I mean, at one point, he was a quarterback. He knows what it feels like to, like, just be a sideshow in your own game. Like, they did have a couple of things. You know, they tried to work him in earlier, and they're like, yeah, it's just not working. So, like, yeah, I mean, stick with what got you here. There was nowhere an opportunity, I thought, where you can just be like, okay, let's just uncork it and see. If they'd gotten that touchdown on the fourth and one, or on the fourth and goal, and they had like a 3-score lead or a 4-score lead, you know, and then got the ball back, like, that's, I think, when they would have opened it up.
It's the discipline is, look, you know what people are going to say, tune that out. And that's exactly what he did. Because you think back to last year, and I made this point after the fact. I didn't have this thought as the game was going on. I was like, man, they're probably going to need to throw the football more while the game was going on. But after the fact, started thinking about what Gattis said in one of the press conferences before the season, where he was like, you know what? It's on me. I didn't stick with the run last year. I should have stuck with the run game more last year, even in situations where down and distance wise, it wouldn't call for it. Like, why are you running here? This is ridiculous, right? But we've seen him run in some down and distance situations like that this year. And what I take from that is there were times last year where they tried to throw Joe into rhythm, and it didn't work. It cost the team. So if you got something, now that their running game wasn't working nearly as well as the one is this year, right? So even more of a reason to, like, look, not try to beat that to death if it's not working. Let's run the football, win the game. We'll work on our pass game in practice and maybe against another opponent and see how it goes then.
Sure. And they try to get him into rhythm, I think, with a couple screens outside. But again, Washington was just taking that away. Like, Washington was very focused on making sure nothing got outside of them. As soon as Blake Corum got the ball, I thought there were times when McNamara could have thrown him a little bit more open or whatever, but, like, that was what Washington was focused on. And, you know, they didn't have Ronnie Bell out there blocking. I thought Samer still was fine, but, like, some of the other guys missed some of their assignments. And, I mean, Roman Wilson just had a terrible game. Like, you know, we talk about early shots. They took an early shot to him down the sideline, but he got jammed at the line. And then he is just absolutely covered. And he doesn't make a play on that ball at all.
Yeah, I thought he had a step. I thought the ball was thrown inside.
I mean, there was a window there, but it was a pretty small window. Like, that was, I thought that he lost that route pretty decisively. But, yeah, and there were just some execution errors. Like, the one that we talked about on Slack, Seth, where it looks like Eric Alls in a really good position to crack a linebacker. And then you have Sainer still leading out for Corum on that swing. I was like, that could have been a real big play. So, yeah, there's just some early season hiccups going on. And, you know, you hope to see Michigan. Teams are going to be sitting on this bubble, right? Because it's effective. They've got the right guys to play it. The flares, the bubbles, the little. So Michigan is going to need to, like, pull some clubs out of the bag and have some counters to that. Hopefully not against Northern Illinois, but I wouldn't be surprised if the. What was the first Big Ten game against?
Rutgers.
Well,
and then Wisconsin.
All right, Wisconsin. We're gonna see some fake flare screens and fake bubbles, and they're gonna take advantage of that, I think, because, teams are gonna sit on it because teams are gonna be scared of it because you don't want that.
Yeah. Samer still can get out there and block. Eric All can get out there and block, and then you got to deal with Corum out there. Like, that's
So it's not. Northern Illinois guys, what do we know about, other than Rocky Lombardi, what do we know about Northern Illinois?
Well, they beat Georgia Tech, but that game was, I think they had like a +3 turnover margin and got outgained badly. So it was just kind of one of those games. So not quite like the Montana game where Montana was just probably the better team. And then they lost to Wyoming by 7. They again in that game had a lot of turnover luck. So they had this kind of spurt to come back from 26 down to briefly lead by a point, but it kind of looks like that's a house of cards for them. And last year, the Mac didn't play last year.
No, Mac played last year, but they were terrible. Yeah, they didn't win last year. They had a lot of close losses, but they were a terrible team last year and lost a whole lot of guys. Like the transition was terrible for them because everybody came and like picked off anyone they wanted from his roster, and they're still kind of working their way back. They got a decent running back in Harrison Whaley, who's kind of like a little speedster, and then Tyrese Ritchie hasn't gotten to have many opportunities yet, but he's like the downfield threat. So like Rocky Lombardi is definitely going to come and throw fades to him over Vincent Gray until we stop it. So I imagine that's going to be their game plan. And then defensively, I think they're pretty terrible. Like they just gave up a ton of points to Wyoming. They play really far back in coverage because their secondary doesn't know what they're doing. They're all really young. So it would be a good opportunity to practice what you want to practice. Let's say that.
Sounds like Rich is going to run the ball 50 times and everybody's going to be super angry.
You know, they have to balance. I mean, you got to be intentional about it. And that if they aren't intentional about it, it will tell me something about how practice. You know, if they come out and it's 15 passes in this game, what it would say to me is, man, he just that week of practice was looking like the week prior of practice, because for them to get away to really sort of see and feel like he's got it and he's not going to get it in this game, and the running game is working to the extent that they emphasized it, it couldn't have just been that game. They had to be seeing some signs in practice during the week too, which I gathered. And if they come out this week and,
all right,
and it's like, you know, 80-20 run, then I'll feel the same way. Of course, they're going to run the football way more than they pass it. But like last game, if it's like that again, and then it will say practice wasn't that good. And then it will also say, man, you got to start working JJ in there more, because you got to develop faith in your passing game some kind of way.
All right. Well, that's a subplot to watch for, because that's like everybody's arguing about whether this was entirely just we're paving them, we want to be safe, or like we. So, I mean, that does say something right there, right? Like,
I do not think it was just that. Certainly was a huge, huge right. part of it.
Yeah,
but it wasn't the only thing. It was not the only thing. That the confidence in the passing game. You were spot on when you said it earlier. I think you said there were some situations in here that if you had confidence and faith in your passing game at its optimal confidence, that you would throw it here. And I think your observation in that regard was spot on. So it's a work in progress. It doesn't mean not alarm bells going off like, oh my God, they can't be a good throw team, but they have to grow their confidence more in the passing game. And this is a game in which to do it, in my opinion.
Yeah. Can we shout out Jay Harbaugh?
Absolutely.
Because like, except for the fact that they lost Ronnie Bell on punt returns and they got some issues there right now, everything else about special teams has been amazing two games into the season. So they go up against Giles Jackson, who everybody is terrified of because we saw him in a Michigan uniform recurring kicks. And all those kicks go to the end zone. They almost block a punt. They get an impact punt return in the opener. They get, Moody hits a 52-yarder. Like, and their punt coverage is excellent. And Robbins is skying them, so there's hardly any punt return opportunities. Like, special teams has been a consistent strength for this program since Harbaugh took over, Jay. And, you know, I think that a lot of people kind of regard him as just kind of a nepotism hire, but I don't think so. Like, I think he's really done excellent work with that unit and continues to. And every year it's a strength.
Yeah. And
he also recruited a running back.
He's an Austin recruiter, too. He's an Austin recruiter, too. So, yeah. Jay, anyone that calls that a nepotism thing just wants to take a shot at Jay.
Yeah, I mean, but the people do, right? Like, there's always going to be that. But the consistent excellence with his primary responsibility, I think, is worth talking about.
Hey, man, they're doing us a favor because, I mean, if he goes and becomes a head coach somewhere because they realize there's too much value in that guy, then we lose that, so.
Ah, man, you can't stand in front of the dude's progress. You want to hold the man down. You know, yeah, I think Jay has aspirations beyond.
I think we're very lucky to still have him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no doubt. So I wanted to ask you guys, because I keep seeing these notes about Mel Pearson killing it on the recruiting trail. We could talk Michigan recruiting. We talk it up. Been talking it a lot. It was an epic weekend. They moved up with a lot of guys. We'll see who they get. But it sounds like Mel is actually getting a bunch of five stars in the fold. So was there another like commit flip on the horizon or something going on there, Brian?
So this happened a few weeks back as they got an official commitment from Adam Fantilli, who's supposed to be like he's locked in as like the number three pick in the 2023 draft. And in many drafts, he would go first overall. He was the playoff MVP of the USHL as a 16-year-old. Which never happens. 16-year-olds die in that league. And he is a truly elite prospect. And he's also bros, and I know I'm going to say this name and you're just going to cackle, with Rutger McGroarty.
Hey, Rutger!
Who was a Notre Dame commit. And when Adam Fantilli committed, Rutger was like, nah, I'm going to go to Michigan. So they flipped another NHL first-round pick from Notre Dame on the heels of getting a top five NHL draft pick. And now the doors are open for the 2023 class. They got a kid in called Charlie Serrato, who's on the national team. They got another commit just yesterday. They are on their way to becoming the Alabama of college hockey.
Wow.
Now.
And there's no Ohio State.
Well, Alabama doesn't play in a league where a lot of the teams are 4 years older than Alabama.
Right.
So, they're not likely to have that level of success solely because recruiting at that level isn't as valuable as recruiting at that level in football is. But, you know, they're going to have seven NHL first round picks on the roster this year. And they have, I think, the number 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7 incoming college prospects according to Puck Prep's rankings. So there's guys who are going to the OHL. We're not counting those guys. But in terms of guys going to college, they have something like 5 of the top 7 guys.
And these recruits don't really change things for you in year one, but they're keeping them.
Well, I mean, you get like, a guy like Kent Johnson in who, I mean, he scored a point per game last year, right?
Yeah.
But sophomore year, like, those guys take off. If you guys remember Jack Johnson's first year, I think he had more penalty minutes than pounds he weighed. And I was very young, and I remember shouting at him, "You're supposed to be the number three pick in the draft," because I was mad at him. And then he came back as a sophomore and absolutely annihilated college hockey. And so Michigan has power back. They have Beniers back. They have Kent Johnson back. All of those guys are going to be way better than they were this year because they were young enough that they went in this draft. So the younger you are, the faster you improve. And so these guys are super talented. They're coming back for a second year in the same system. And then they brought in Brandon Nerado to be an assistant coach. And there's an Athletic article about Nerado, just what he does in the offseason. And he was the director of player development, I think, for the Wings. I'm not sure if that was the actual title, but that's what he did. So that's a slam dunk hire in terms of getting people better. And they brought back a couple of like grinder types. You know, they brought back Luke Morgan and Pastiov for COVID 6 years, and they've got Van Wy. Like, the only question really is like, so they got to replace Straussman. They have Portillo, and I think Portillo is going to be good, but Straussman was established. And if they get good goaltending from Portillo, they're going to be a monster.
So, I mean, put this in perspective, because Michigan hockey has been at one of the premier hockey programs in America. So they've recruited well, you know, in the past, but it's unprecedented in this program, the recruiting run that Mel is on.
Yeah. I mean, they had 4 of the top 5 picks in the NHL draft. No program, college or junior, has ever come close to that. Like, and I don't want to, like, I think people are going to be disappointed with anything other than a national championship. And I don't think that is quite fair just because of the tournament format, right? Like, you know, it's a single elimination hockey tournament, which means anything can happen. But yeah, I expect them to be a 1 seed. I expect them to, I mean, Minnesota's real good. I mean, the problem is that they have a conference that there's really no nights off except for
Michigan State.
Even Michigan State's getting better. Like there's no like Alaska Fairbanks in this league where you're just going to run in and win 8-1 both nights. But yeah, so they had a real talent drought because the time frames in hockey are so extended that when there was uncertainty about whether Red was coming back or something, that hurt like three or four classes. And this class that just came in was really the first one that they were able to recruit from scratch. And you saw what they did. And you saw what they're doing in the next class. And they're starting to do that in the class after. And there's a momentum there, right? Like,
I agree.
Yeah, so it's...
Well, I mean, you know, you got...
No, like, don't do that. Take them all.
I'm talking about with the other programs. The other programs on campus, not...
Oh.
Not other hockey programs.
Well, I don't think he did. We got a hockey player as the backup quarterback right now.
We got Juwan. Juwan is doing all right for himself, too.
Need a little bit of that magic to start flowing over on the football
side. Isn't field hockey number one in the country right now, too?
Yeah. I don't think they almost took out Stanford in the Director's Cup last year. So I think things are going pretty well. So,
all right. Well, fellas, I got to say it has been great to have Brian Cook back in the house for sure. Missed you, my man. You look good. You sound good. And, you know, it's coming off a victory. I hope that we can have the same kind of mood on a weekly basis, because that means that Michigan will have won every single game. Now, I don't expect that. But I can hope, right? I can hope.
Well, yeah.
Last one for you, though. What did you make of Ohio State? I thought when we watched the Ohio State-Minnesota game, they don't have the defense to compete for a national championship. Then they go out and lose to Oregon and confirm that. That does not mean they aren't the best team in the Big Ten, but unless you think Iowa is. What do you think of?
Iowa is not the best team in the Big Ten.
What do you think of how the Big Ten shapes up or shakes out now?
I mean, it's still Ohio State and everybody else, right? Like, even in the Oregon game, their receivers had terrifying stats. Stroud had terrifying stats. And you remember that Virginia Tech game some years ago where they came out in a double eagle and completely stuffed the Ohio State offense, won that game? Well, I got bad news, is that Ohio State knows something's wrong and they're going to fix big parts of it, because the Ohio State guys I trust, like Ross Fulton, they're like, I don't know what we're doing. This game plan doesn't make any sense. We're not executing. And if he can see it, Ryan Day can see it. So I don't think
the offensive game plan.
No, the defensive game plan.
Yeah. they have no edge. Like the linebackers are just not getting to their gaps.
So they're going to fix
Washington,
that.
Al Washington's going to call the defense, but what can?
Whoa, that's news.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Speculating that Al Washington is going to call the defense.
You don't think Kerry Coombs is the mind behind the?
No, I mean, he told you what he thought of Kerry Coombs this week.
Yeah.
Very, very.
So, like, that's
Al Washington is his guy. They had to sweeten the pot to keep Al from leaving anyway. Al's going to be calling that defense.
All right. Well, then I think that'll be like, they're going to learn, they're going to improve, and they're going to trash the Big Ten still.
And how much how many of his concepts can he install, though? I mean, he probably has to call the defense they have right now. Maybe he probably can do a better job than Kerry Coombs, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like they installed a defense that doesn't have an edge, right? Like, that's not what you do.
I don't think they did.
So I think that there are things that can get fixed and then they'll be sound. And I don't think they're going to be a good defense. Well, they'll be a good defense. I don't think they're going to be a championship level defense. But yeah, I don't think what we saw against Oregon is going to be what we see in 3 weeks, unfortunately.
All right. Well, folks, we got to get out of here. Brian Cook, glad to have you back, my brother. Seth Fisher, my guy.
Shout out to Mitch,
get better. I know Craig is listening. Get better, Craig. Hope to see you next week for the rest of you. We got to get out of here. See you tomorrow on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.